A Life of Jesus by Brother Malva Perkis. Chapter 3. Home Life in Nazareth. Nazareth will always hold precious associations to those who've come to know and love Jesus. The memories may be saddened by the reflection that the darker tendencies of human nature prevailed in the treatment he received from those among whom he grew up. Yet by far the greater part of his earthly life was spent there. It was the place chosen by his father to be the scene of the preparation for the great work that lay ahead. And for 30 years, he sanctified the little time with his presence, learning the law and the purpose of God, and growing to understand the ways of men. Nestling in the shelter of a ring of the southernmost hills of Lower Galilee, Nazareth was a beautiful little town, its white buildings spread up the hillside, interspersed with orange and fig groves. For many months of the year, the rocky slopes glowed with the vivid hues of the multicoloured anemones and the clusters of white and mauve cyclamen growing under the lichen-covered rocks, whilst the spring and early summer brought its harvest of narcissi, and the warm months saw the full beauty of the dark blue patches of cornflowers and light blue clusters of dwarf iris. Although Nazareth was a secluded town, the stream of life passed very near it. Little could be seen from the town itself, but climbing the hillside to the edge of the basin, the wonderful prospect stretched away in three directions. Perhaps the first eager gaze would be toward the west, where the wooded bluff of Carmel stretched out into the deep blue waters of the Mediterranean, 20 miles away. To the south and southwest lay the vast plain of Esdraelon, the scene of a score or more of decisive battles in the past, and yet to be the battleground of man's final rebellion against his Maker. And beyond the plain to the south rose the heights of Samaria, whilst eastwards were the hills of Galilee and the Jordan crossings. Northward the hills rolled away towards the Phoenician coast, broken by jagged rents where swiftly flowing rivers and mountain streams gushed and tumbled towards the sea. Away to the northeast, it would be possible on a clear day to discern the dominating peaks of Hermon, wrapped in their almost unearthly mantle of eternal snow. This scene was animated by the movement of many travellers. The way of the sea, which brought merchant caravans from Damascus, skirted the Sea of Galilee, and crossing the great sweep of Esdraelon below, turned south along the coastal plain of Sharon to Egypt. From the fords of Jordan in the east, the caravans of the Midianites could be seen winding down the hills, while directly south, across the vast expanse of sand and scrub, crowded with pilgrims as the festival days drew near, lay the road through Samaria to Jerusalem. Struggling among the mountains to the north of Galilee was the road from Ptolemais to the regions of Decapolis, echoing constantly with the steady tramp of Roman soldiers. Many would be the stories that the people of Nazareth would hear from the peasants in the countryside around, and sometimes from the lips of tired travellers who climbed the narrow paths to seek shelter and rest in the secluded town. They would hear of events in Egypt and in Syria. They would listen to stories of splendour and rumours of intrigue from the great heart of the Roman Empire itself. They would hear with fast-beating hearts the news of the intentions of Augustus in Palestine, of the possible successor to the throne in Jerusalem. And they would exchange dark glances as they heard a still heavier taxation, and betray mixed feelings over the possibility of direct control from Rome. The little village itself was full of life and colour. The well was seldom deserted and provided a happy meeting place for the women who'd linger there with stone jars resting beside them, exchanging the gossip of the place with candour. The prospect of a wedding would bring animated chatter and happy laughter, and while sometimes their voices would be hushed and their faces saddened by the news of sickness or death. Except in the heat of the day, the steep, crooked streets would be full of noise and bustle, the laughter of happy children at play, the cries of the merchants from their shops hollowed out in the walls, the occasional plaintive call of a beggar, the bray of an ass, the raucous bleat of goats, all combined to make the animated scene which forms a black background to the life in this hilly Galilean retreat. It was in this beautiful and eventful setting that Jesus grew to maturity. Only one incident is recorded of him during these years. Natural as it seems to desire a greater knowledge of his childhood, we must recognise a divine wisdom in this concealment and appreciate the fitting summary of his early life given to us by Luke. And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favour with God and man. Jesus grew to moral and intellectual maturity as naturally as he grew to be physically taller and stronger, travelling the road we all travel, struggling against the temptations which are common to youth, attaining virtue by the direct assault of evil and the triumph of personal effort. He sought strength from his Father and found favour by repeated endeavour and steady improvement. There is a possibility that in our reverence for Jesus we overlook the implications of this gradual development and are deprived of the true comfort of the mediatorship of him who suffered, being tempted, who was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin. The divine reticence in the Gospel leads our minds to the simple yet beautiful picture of a growing boy helping his mother in her homely tasks, often walking with her down the crowded and lively street to make her daily purchases and fetch water from the well, learning from her quiet example the beauty of godliness and the strength of faith. We see him as he grows older making frequent visits to the busy carpenter's shop, where the noise of the hammer and the saw proclaim Joseph's skillful service to the people around. As he grows older, he begins to use the tools himself and learns the satisfaction of creative work, until his interest and skill begin to lighten the burden of the father of a growing family. There are significant indications in his teaching that there were days of struggle against poverty. The parables of Jesus are full of homely scenes, which may well have had their source in his own early experience. The patched garment, the widow's feverish search for a lost coin of little value, father and children sharing a bed, the one raised lamp which could illuminate the whole house. All these seem to reflect the struggling circumstances of his youth. The humble dwelling constantly echoed with the laughter of happy children, but there were times of childish crisis too, and instinctively the younger ones would look to Jesus to settle their difficulties and calm the angry waters. As the months lengthened into years, a gradual change would have been discernible in Jesus. He grew in favour with God, and that is ever a slow and beautiful process. Its beginning is always hidden in mystery. It may have been on the heights above Nazareth, where the rising sun was turning the hills over the Jordan Valley to gold, and Jesus was becoming aware of the creative power of God. It may have been in the breathless stillness of a star-filled night, when a man feels the strange loneliness of his insignificance. It may have been in the flickering light of the carpenter's shop, when, the day's work done, Joseph was revealing to him some of the wonders of God's deliverance and care of his people. We do not know where that flame of consciousness was kindled. We do know it grew and that Jesus encouraged it by so diligent a study of the law and the prophets that when he was only 12, the most learned rabbis in the land marvelled at his acquaintance with the scriptures. Joseph would recognise the responsibility of teaching his children the law of the Lord. It was a father's sacred trust in Israel, even after all those centuries of disobedience and travail. These words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. No child ever listened more carefully to the words of the law than Jesus. How long Joseph was able to continue his spiritual ministrations, we do not know. His complete disappearance from the Gospel page suggests his early death, and the probability that at an early age the responsibilities of the godly carpenter were accepted by Jesus. When he was about 6, the spiritual guidance of his home would be supplemented by the instruction of a scribe at the synagogue school in Nazareth. All the synagogues had these schools for teaching the young. but a child who did not graduate to the higher education of the house of Midrash, attached to the temple at Jerusalem, was not considered learned. And this was to be remembered against him in later years, when Jesus challenged the scribes upon their knowledge and their conduct. Amid the wonder and solitude of his father's creation, knowledge was transformed by that strange alchemy into wisdom, and prayer turned to communion. There have been many examples of children with an outstanding ability to absorb facts. The development of Jesus went far beyond that. He meditated upon God's revelation, and often Mary would find his bed empty in those sacred days of preparation, when meditation moved towards communion. And with a growing sense of awe, Jesus began to suspect the unique significance of his life and ponder his relationship to God. Mary too would be conscious of the new sense of awareness in her son. There is no more penetrating discernment than a mother's love, and that discernment was increased a hundredfold by the things which she had hid in her heart. Watching her son returning down the hillside, the glow of the father's presence still reflected in the light of his eyes and in the assurance of his voice, Mary would feel again the thrill of Gabriel's approach and hear once again his vibrant words proclaiming her son, the long-awaited Messiah of Israel. This quiet but powerful development went on as the years passed, and the child grew and waxed strong in spirit, filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him. In despised Galilee, far from the glittering opulence of the Roman court, far from the rabbinical schools of Jewish learning, Jesus grew up like a tender plant and as a root out of the dry ground, preparing himself and being prepared by the Father for his manifestation first to Israel and then to all mankind.